Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started.
Andrew Carnegie didn't get taught how to run his business. JP Morgan did not get taught how to do banking. They just figured it out. And yeah. So when that's big shoes to fill, and I even tell people all the time, because I took over with my dad on his business, I probably wouldn't have started a business like my dad did, because I don't know how to do that, but I know how to run this business and I do it well. But to think what my dad had to go through to get to where he is, I would not want to do that.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Money Moves. As always, your host, Maddie A., my co-host, Mr. Ryan Breedwell.
What's up, y'all?
We cover all things stocks, real estate, investing, and personal finance with a little sprinkle of politics to help you on your wealth-building journey. As always, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. If you enjoy the show, anything that we talk about, all we ask, take 60 seconds, leave a review, tell us how awesome and or how terrible we are as hosts, but we know it's always going to be the former. We got some great updates for you guys today, mainly a lot of stuff around rate talk in June.
Yep.
We'll be digging into that. And just some really interesting headlines and highlights over the course of the last week. A lot of topics around global politics, the war, what's going on with Trump, and some reporting coming out on housing data. So we got some updates for you guys there as well. So let's dig into today. Number one, Trump is prevented from going to his son's graduation. Media is telling the world to hate Donald Trump more than anyone in all of human history, which I find kind of interesting. Not saying he's the most likable guy, but it is interesting to think about what they are so afraid of.
I mean, above Hitler?
I mean, they've...
They've put him in the same sentence. There's a lot of people I could hate more than Donald Trump. It's just, it's wild that people don't like him so much. Because he hasn't like done like anything crazy.
Well, he has the grabber by the you know what that pissed off a lot of women. Then he's got obviously how they paint him in the media around his taxes, and
because a woman has never said anything behind closed doors.
I'm not saying
a man has never said anything. I think it's just funny that people act so holy when they hear somebody else do something, and like I would never say something like that.
And I just think it's interesting to think of, has there ever been any other public figure that has been demonized and or gone after in the way that the justice system has gone after him?
Oh, that's a no. We know that.
Ever.
No. Whether you put that specific twist on it, the answer is no.
Right. So I think what a lot of people fail to understand is why Donald Trump is getting so much support and attention right now. Obviously, bad attention and legal troubles from the left. Mm-hmm. But now all of a sudden, a lot of good attention from people that really didn't support him before. I think what a lot of people don't understand is that people aren't supporting specifically Donald Trump.
Yeah.
The individual. I think it's not really about Donald Trump. What MAGA has become is now not Donald Trump. It is about America.
Yeah, it's about getting back to some normalcy.
And people are just searching for someone, anyone, to fight corruption and preserve freedom and constitutional rights. And he just happens to be the guy. Does he say the right things? Does he go about doing it the right way? I think a lot of people would say absolutely not.
Definitely not.
But he is the voice of people that care about America now.
Yeah.
And are feeling like what the policies and what the left is doing is no longer a representation of them and their best interests. When you've got, you know, we just see in California, I think every other day we see a video of boats literally flying up onto the beach in San Diego and hundreds of people jumping out of them, running into the community, getting into cars and skirting off, right? That's just one example of some of the issues that people are going, nobody is calling a spade and saying that this is a problem.
Well, yeah. And then we have like domestic stuff with like people shutting down the Bay Bridge. And so we have it inside and outside. It's like coming from all areas right now. And it just, people are really fed up. And I think the people that are, you know, it's bad when you have like moderate Democrats are like, I'm voting for Trump because I'm definitely not voting for Biden again.
Yeah. Hate the guy, but I'm going to vote for him because I think my interest in what he's going to do policy-wise are most aligned, even though, man, I hate what he says. I hate how he does it. I hate how he carries himself. Yeah. But the policies, even though they these individuals and talking heads can check the box of appeasing you, you know, from a charismatic standpoint, or maybe saying what you want to hear, but the policies and how they're playing out are now really showing up in people's neighborhoods, literally, in their businesses, in their communities. I mean, you look at California, this was a big news that came out this week. California spent $24 billion to tackle homelessness over the past 5 years. A lot of hardworking Californians' tax dollars. $24 billion, but didn't consistently track that. After a state audit, they could not even figure out where the money went. Like $24 billion. They cannot even figure out where the money went. And statistically, after the audit was released, looking at homeless statistics and looking at where that money went, which was unaccounted for, the statistics of homelessness have gone way up in California, gotten way worse. They're showing up in communities they never were seen before. So again, these are just things, right, that now we're starting to, oh, that doesn't impact me. Well, now some of these things are really starting to show up on people's front doors, literally.
Well, now it's like it's hitting from all areas. It's inflation. It's domestic policy on when people are doing stupid stuff. I mean, San Francisco is one of the most liberal cities in the United States, if not the most liberal. And there was people that live in San Francisco getting out of their cars, yelling at these people, get out of the way. People that were going to miss their flights, taking their suitcases and luggage out, trying to catch taxis. It was just, it's to the point where it's kind of like, everybody's fed up. Nobody wants to deal with that. The way you try to get your point across is not that way. And when you do things like that, you alienate yourself from like the normal people.
Mm-hmm.
And those are people on the far left. I mean, I watched a video today of some guy like literally holding a piece of rebar inside of a bucket, acting like his hand was getting hurt. And they just go up and pull the rebar out of his hand and like, just take your hand out. You're good.
He was like screaming.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, stop twisting my hand. They're like, just take your hand out. We're not touching you.
So it's all on video too.
It's all on video. Yeah. And so it's just ridiculous. And like, I don't know when it'll be over, but I feel like it's sooner rather than later now.
I don't know.
Well, I think that people are like fed up. I know that people are fed up. Man, I think more people are fed up than not.
Never underestimate the government's ability to play the propaganda game at the highest of levels.
I don't underestimate it.
I don't underestimate it. I don't think they're going to go down without a fight. And I think that there is still plenty of bullets left in the chamber, especially heading into November.
I think their fight is with trying to get Trump accused in court, and they keep failing at that. I mean, the only thing he's been quote unquote found anything guilty was in civil court. He hasn't been found criminally liable in any criminal case yet. And so that, and this whole thing that's going on right now, it's a campaign finance and it's BS. Because no, Obama had campaign finance violations. Bush did, Obama did. They all paid it's a misdemeanor. And it's a common misdemeanor.
Yeah, they know how to
play
the game.
People pay a fine. This is the first one that's been escalated because they're saying like he hid the money payment from Stormy Daniels. So that's campaign finance rule, but it's all under one umbrella of a misdemeanor. And so it's just, again, it's an uneven application of the law. It's going to be very easy to prove precedent, I believe, on it. And that the petty stuff is a good example that they know they're probably not going to win. They're like, all right, let's at least not let them go to the thing. Hey, you have to come to your trial every day or I'm going to arrest you. You know, stupid stuff like that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
People act like that when they don't have a good base to stand on.
Well, Speaker Mike Johnson, who has been catching some heat from the right recently, has led the GOP to pass an omnibus that spends more than Pelosi's highest year, an expansion of the domestic warrantless surveillance program. And this week he is pushing Chuck Schumer's bill, which contains another $100 billion in foreign aid. A lot of people on the right are not too happy with this. Mm-hmm. That being said, he did recently push and introduce the SAVE Act, which many people feel is going to at least add to securing the election integrity. And what that essentially entails is that illegal immigrants cannot vote in federal elections.
Yeah, which is pretty common sense. It's literally the law everywhere else except in the United States. I don't know why this is even a question.
Well, it's funny, right? Because the left says, no, illegals aren't voting in our elections. But now that Republicans want to put forward a bill that bans illegals from voting, they're actually like very mad. They're upset. There's not one that supports it. Yes. So it's just funny, right? If they're not voting in our elections, why can't we ban them from voting in our elections?
Yeah, because
like it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, because it's a pretty straight. I think that bill is very straightforward too. One of the reasons I think
you think it's going to get passed.
I don't know. I think that Mike Johnson is playing both sides because in his position, especially when you're the minority, you kind of need to.
Yeah,
and I think he's trying to say, we already have this stuff going on. So if we get something reapproved of programs that are already going on, we keep some foreign aid, maybe I can convince enough people to come across the aisle to get this one done. Because I'm saying, look, I'm guessing here and I'm throwing out assumptions, but maybe he's saying, look, if I can get these things across the aisle and we can at least bend the knee now, knowing that we probably are going to have majority in the White House in November, let's get these little things through and let's try to get this at least done so that we can have integrity in our elections coming up, because that's more important in the short term and what's going to affect us now than these things right here.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because you got a lot of people that are saying, man, the Republicans thought they had the House, but based on the way a lot of voting has gone and on the way a lot of Republicans had voted in bills in the House, seems like the left has a little bit more insulation than people initially thought.
I think the left is full of more lifelong and old guard politicians than the right is. The right is a lot more younger faces. But I think that that's also their biggest Achilles heel, because Nancy Pelosi is, I mean, I don't wish this upon her, but she's not gonna be alive in 10 years. So that's coming to an end.
I heard Klaus Schwab has recently fallen.
Yeah, he's
ill.
Not.
I've heard whispers.
And
about
I told
that.
You a couple years ago he
you
wasn't
did
gonna
say that,
he's
yeah.
not gonna be around for so like when these people fall off.
Yeah, but there's always when one boss goes down, yeah, another hungry yeah, soldier comes up, man.
I know, but it's been proven throughout history that people that take over for leaders, especially successful leaders, mm-hmm. have a very low percentage of being successful, carrying on and continuing. Because a lot of the times they don't know how to.
They're just not that cut from
a
that
lot
kind
of
cloth.
The stuff that these people are doing, they innately did and didn't get taught it. You know, Andrew Carnegie didn't get taught how to run his business. JP Morgan did not get taught how to do banking. They just figured it out. And yeah. So when that's big shoes to fill, and I even tell people all the time, because I took over with my dad on his business, I probably wouldn't have started a business like my dad did, because I don't know how to do that, but I know how to run this business and I do it well. But to think what my dad had to go through to get to where he is, I would not want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I graciously say that, to be honest, it's a real thing. So why would I think Klaus Schwab's son is going to be able to do what he has zero. Nobody knows who he is besides that you're his son.
George Soros' son is making some waves.
Yeah.
He's taking that.
Spending money, and he's doing well. All these people came up, they made decisions based on their gut. You can't recreate that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shooters that had percentages very similar to Michael Jordan, but they still weren't as good as him.
Yeah.
Because he threw down when it mattered most, and a lot of people couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So that to me is, these people are going to be out. We have fresh faces coming in. I mean, look at the fresh faces that are coming in on the Democrat side. You have AOC, idiot. You have Rashida Tlaib or whatever.
Rashida Tlaib.
She's really, I'm naming women and I'm not doing that because they're women. I'm saying that's the level of what we have to compete with. Oh, bring it on. I mean, that's going to be super easy.
Yeah, but you know what's even crazier? Look at their support that these
women
have. They have bigger followings than anyone on the right.
AOC's district has turned on her. They said next time in the election, they're voting her out.
I hope that's the case, but I'm curious to see, right? Because these are all machine
they're good
puppets.
At social media, but eventually that only gets you so far. What's his name on the Republican side? The guy that got caught for all the fraud? The little chubby dude with the crappy hair?
Matt Gaetz?
No. Chubby. Matt Gaetz is not chubby.
Chubby.
It's just that the little dude lied and he was spending all his campaign finance on OnlyFans. That dude.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. He was really good at social media and it got him so far. But eventually you get found out.
Yeah.
And when you get found out, you'll get tossed out just like he did. And that'll eventually happen to these people. And I can tell you, I've seen lots of videos of people in her district of all shapes, sizes, and colors saying AOC sucks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you see videos on the street of how people feel about politicians, not what you're seeing, and on the right and the left, right? But what you're not seeing and reading or hearing on CNN or Fox News, whatever, echo chamber that's coming in, there's a lot of people that are unhappy with both of their parties.
Correct.
And it sucks that we cannot find or have some real quality candidates that we feel are not bought, care about America, want to do things that are fair and, taking into account all of the situations that are going on right now that aren't getting us into World War III, that are still protecting our borders, right? I mean, it just seems like there's common sense policy that we're just missing right now. So we'll digress off of the weekly clown show of what we call politics, and we'll move over to the interesting comments this week from Mr. Jerome Powell, who just as of today, I believe,
today at about 1:30 Eastern.
Yep. Recent data has clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it is likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence when discussing inflation. CPI data has not been supportive of a soft landing. And Powell has said that there has been a lack of progress this year on inflation. Essentially, reading between the lines, a pause in June versus the first rate cut of the year is looking more likely.
Yep. And the July meeting is where only place there's a little bit of meat on the bone after that, but it's still...
I mean, could this get pushed out into Q4?
It could. And the thing that the conflict that over in Israel, between Israel and Iran, spiked oil prices. The thing that's going to be interesting is based on his comments, CPI. But the Fed has stated very clearly, they are not using CPI to guide them for cuts.
What are they using?
PCE.
PCE. Now explain what that is again and why they are focusing on that. Here, I can pull it up.
Yeah.
PCE.
I know a very not clear way to explain
it. So PCE measure.
Producer cost expenditure, I think is what it is.
Yep. PCE PI. So PCE price index measures the prices consumers pay for goods and services and changes in those prices.
So that is more important to the Fed right now because housing is stubborn because of inventory, and they're trying to take that into account. They're trying to cut out things that are giving them artificially high areas of the market. And oil is too volatile right now because we're going into summer, and now there's a geopolitical conflict somewhere in the Middle East.
And our petroleum reserve is
correct
at an all-time low.
So that's going to keep that number artificially high. So they're looking for a number or a data point that they can look at that blocks or mutes that out and shows what people are actually feeling. Because 40% of, I believe, that index comprises of oil. And like, I don't spend 40% of my income on oil. And so that does not in line with how consumers spend. So what PCE has not gone up and not spiked at all, has gone down month over month. But I was saying to you earlier, the rate that it's going down is slower than they are wanting it to in order to get to the point where they can cut. It is mid twos on PCE. That's where we're at right now. And it continues to go down. The Fed also said and has reiterated, they do not need to hit their target to begin cutting as long as they see that the path there looks like it's on that and steadily on that. I don't know how soon we're going to get there. There just keeps being things that are not happening. And really what I'm looking at as I look at like the January 2025 S&P futures, those kind of give me an idea because that to get what the stock market is kind of saying. And right now the market's still pricing in two cuts. High likelihood of two cuts.
This year.
Yeah. But that would probably mean September, December versus what I would prefer, which is they start in July. Because I feel like PCE is going to come in at a level that's going to say, okay, well, if we don't need to make it to 2 and we're at 2.6, how much further do we need to go back down? When are we close enough? Or as I've mentioned a few other times, will they raise their target to 2.5, which is more reasonable? Because it was 2.4 to 2.7 in 2019. So why do we have to be at 2%? I don't even know if we've ever been there in the past 10 years. So why do we have to get there now?
Yeah.
So those are all valid arguments, but the honest truth and the elephant in the room right now is they're going to probably have to pause for longer than the market was pricing in January through March.
So let's talk about that real quick. Then if the market already priced in an expected rate cut in Q2.
That's why you see pullbacks.
The
market is forward looking. That's why.
Yep.
That's why there's going to be pullbacks because people are going to say, "Oh, okay, crap." Not that it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen when we put our money on.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go ahead and pull our money back out, reposition it, and do it again when the time calls. I'm more so of a sector allocator and focusing on specific names or specific sectors. And we have noticed, and I showed you today, the Dow ended up today almost 20 basis points, so a fifth of a percent through the volatile trading session that there was today. And 51% of the orders on the market were purchases, not sales. So there was still more purchase volume than sell orders. The things that people always forget are these indexes are market cap weighted, meaning just like oil over influences the CPI number to go up, sometimes names like NVIDIA or Facebook or Amazon or Google, they have a larger percentage of the 500 companies in the S&P 500, sometimes up to more than 25% of the index. And that when those names comprise that much of an index and they are all down in one day, that index is going to look like it's doing a lot worse than it actually is. A lot of the names inside that index were making money today. It just looks worse than it is. So what I was telling you earlier, we're seeing a rotation a little bit back to more value names. People are really focusing on balance sheets, companies that if inflation stays high, who can make it through that? Good PE ratios, good price to book ratios. That's what people are looking for. So balance sheets just came in a little more scrutiny. People took some profits as they should have. The market's been on a tear for the past 6 to 8 months. But this is nothing that concerns me. not even with the conflict in Iran and Israel. We're not going to get involved directly. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, I sent you a couple of things, which I thought was your responses were good because obviously
Iran has
it's easy to get wrapped up in war. You know, you see all of these World War III. We're getting, you know, thanks Joe Biden. We're getting wrapped in a World War III, right? And people just get so emotionally charged and F Joe Biden and F this administration. Now we're in World War III.
Russia straight up said they're like, we're not going to help. We're not getting involved. We don't want to fight the United States in a war. They verbatim, Vladimir Putin said on camera, the United States military budget is more than our budget for everything. And it's bigger than the military budget of all of our allies and everybody else in the world. We don't have the money to fight the United States in a war, and especially don't have it right now. And we don't want to. We really don't want to. He said we have our disagreements, and it's on a lot of things, domestically and foreign, but we don't want to fight a war with them. We would not be able to afford a war. And that's an honest thing. And so if you think Iran can afford to fight a war against us, they can't. They have a really poo-poo military. It's really old machinery. I know that they do a lot of propaganda videos of a lot of missiles and stuff. A lot of that shit's fake, just so everybody knows.
Yeah, actually, I saw a couple. There was a guy that's got an AI channel, and a lot of the stuff this last week that was coming out around the bombings in Israel and Iran, it was like almost 80... I think it was like 8 out of 10 of the things that came out were all fake videos and images.
Yeah. And it's,
which is crazy, right? Because most people are never going to think, oh, let me run this through an AI to double check to see if this is actually real or not. And then if it isn't real, what does that mean? And if it is real, what does that mean? Right. Like the common person is not going to think through that process and then check emotion to the side and then make logical decisions based on that, right? They're going to go, oh my God, we're in World War III. Look at all these bombs. Look at all these rockets flying in the sky.
Well, it was supposed to be, so it's the World War III thing gets tossed around because it sounds sexy. I don't know why, but they said the same thing with Ukraine and Russia. And they're saying the same thing with Israel and Iran. They said the same thing with Israel and Gaza. It's just not going to happen. And the reason is nobody's going to get in a direct conflict with two small countries and risk getting into a full-scale war, no, especially right now. China's not doing great. Russia's not doing great. India's doing good. But the United States is in a tight spot. There's just not people are not down to go to war right now. Would they go to war? Of course. They protect themselves. And the other thing I would say is nobody's launching a damn nuke. And if Iran wanted to launch a nuke, they couldn't. Even if they hit the button, it wouldn't work. They fired over 300, and I think it was like 312 ballistic missiles and unmanned suicide drones. You know, they like blow up, and three ballistic missiles and one drone got through. And Jordan, UAE, France, UK, United States, Israel, they were off the coast in their ships shooting down the ballistic missiles with lasers. So most of the actual footage that people saw where it looked like it was like fireworks and kind of like raining down pieces of shrapnel, it was because it was raining down pieces of shrapnel. They were shooting the stuff down before it got to its target. One casualty, I believe, which was a young girl, which is not good. But to think that that is a show of force and something that would scare Israel is a farce. Israel's military is one of the best in the world. They train a lot of other militaries. Their technology is great. They're funded by us. We give them all the weapons. They give us technology back as well. It's not a winning combo. Iran would, I would tell you this, they would do to Iran what they did to Gaza, and they would do it faster because they would have none of this. You know, we have to threaten, you know, this tiny little area. They have the whole country. They would blow up all their nuclear sites. They would shut down all their power. They would light all their oil on fire like happened in the Afghan war with us. And then they would literally create an embargo and wrap all their cities and just start starving their people out. And the government would eventually give up because they don't have the resources to fight a war like Israel does. And so that there's not going to be a conflict. Is there going to be a response from Israel? Probably. Is Iran going to say they're going to respond? Probably. It's just not really things that are going to affect us, I believe, minus We may give some more aid to Israel. Mm-hmm. And we may, and guess what that's going to do? If you have exposure to U.S. aerospace and defense or defense manufacturers, we do. Well,
Lockheed Martin just got a $17 billion missile defense contract.
Go check your portfolio.
I was going to ask you if we bought that.
We bought a long time ago.
Well, let's talk about, I know some people are like, oh, I don't like when they talk about politics on the show.
At the end of the day, policy impacts. Legislative risk is one of the biggest systemic risks
when it comes
market.
To wealth building.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if you're invested in the stock market. Yes, it... You know,
obviously, look at the past 3 days. That's all legislative and geopolitical risk right in front of you.
Well, and when I interviewed Vivek Ramaswamy, he said, even if you don't like politics, politics likes you. And that just like always stuck in my head, right? Because the more you get exposure to life and you gain a little bit more life experience. I was young and dumb and ignorant when I was younger, right? Because I didn't have a lot of responsibilities like I do today. I didn't take risks and make decisions that have the weight and impact they do today. And as I get older, I'm like, politics matters. Policy matters. It's yucky and infuriating and, you know, as heavy as it can feel sometimes, it matters. And if you want to be wealthy and live a great life, it matters. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking about this. I sent this to you, and this was kind of a theoretical situation that this one guy on Twitter, he's definitely a big bear and is kind of a crybaby and a doomsdayer. That being said, he said, Iran attacks Israel, oil spikes.
Michael Gade.
Oil and yen spikes. The Bank of Japan panics to save the yen. Reverse carry trade. A global margin call. The U.S. is fucked. Walk us through...
I mean, that's just not going to happen.
The likelihood of that.
0%.
And why, if it were to, why would we be screwed? Is it because we're holding so much?
If this dude can hit an 11-legger, I mean, he's getting on prize picks.
That's right. That's one hell of a parlay that he's got to hit there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That Michael Gade, just if anybody doesn't know, and I'm only going to talk about factual things that are on his public Twitter. So that this is not slanderous to Michael Gade. This is simply just factual.
This is what he put on. This is a Twitter post he made.
He's a fucking idiot. he is. I mean, that saying something like that, I would put somebody into a category of you are an absolute idiot. You have to give quantifiable. I mean, and the U.S. is fucked. And that post has gone viral. A lot of people.
But it's like writing a fictional story.
If you go look at his ex, which you should, he is literally posting pictures like of the Harry Potter Phoenix, saying like, I've been wrong for 3 years, but I'm now finally going to be right. And you guys will all, he's been wrong for a long time. He has a risk off, risk on ETF that he tries to sell to people. He charges like a 1.5% expense ratio, which is whack. It has a negative return over the lifetime of the fund. And it's because he's always a doomsdayer.
Well, here's one that he made today. So let's just spice it up even a little bit more. They sucked everyone in, turned everyone bullish. No one is bearish. No one is watching the yen. No one understands lags. It's coming. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. I stay true to my analysis, to conditions. This is how you have a rug pull setup. I will not relent. Watch, it's coming.
Yeah. I mean, this is the new Peter Schiff, except he likes lumber, not just gold.
Peter Schiff's a little more level-headed than this dude.
Well, yeah, if you go look at
this dude's a little bit out there.
Look at his profile picture. He has a piece of lumber and a piece of gold coming. It's like the laser eyes for Bitcoin, but it's gold and a piece of lumber. Because he says, and I'm not kidding you, that those are the two best indicators for risk on and risk off.
Gold is sending a warning. Utilities are sending a warning. And now treasuries are sending a warning. I will not, every post, I will not relent.
Yeah.
Okay, exactly. Gold is up.
Yeah.
Utilities are way up.
Yeah.
Energy costs are way up, right?
Well, I don't know if utilities are way up.
A lot of energy is up.
Energy costs are up.
And treasuries are now, what does he mean by treasuries are sending a warning?
Well, because the yields in treasuries are spiking again, which is bad for inflation numbers.
So is there any validity to that statement then?
No. I would tell you right now, Michael Gade has not very accurate. He is in the ballpark of a Robert Kiyosaki, current Robert Kiyosaki. I'll give younger Robert Kiyosaki a tip of the hat. You know, he was a little more normal back then. But this guy's so full of himself, to the point it's a little bit obnoxious.
Why is gold up so much right now?
For one thing, it's been in a lull for almost 12, 13 years. Second, people are looking for a place to put their money. Really what I think it is in China and India, they're buying a lot of gold right now and they don't want to buy U.S. treasuries. So they buy gold from the United States. That's what I'm seeing a lot of. Mm. I really don't know why it comes and goes. It's a boom bust commodity. But what I can tell you is in some of our portfolios, especially our like factor portfolios that hold more ETFs and mutual funds, we hold gold. And it's been, you know, we're up since for a lot of my clients because I bought it like around 2020, 30, 40% on it, but it's never pays a dividend. It just made that rate of return in the past 8 months and they've made lots more money on equities. So I still prefer equities because equities have a yield. Gold to me, you have to buy it in a dip and ride it up and then sell it and buy it again. And that's how you're profitable with it because gold's like physical gold. It's really hard to use unless you're like a big company making, you know, chips or semiconductor parts. That's where it's very much used. But like if you or I have gold and we want to use it for money, that's really hard.
Yeah.
Or if we want to turn it into a store of value, like a gold bar, I don't know how to melt gold and smelt it. Do you?
No.
So those things will always, I believe, limit us. Fucking eyelash. These things will always limit us on like why gold is like really not a great store of value for long-term investors, in my opinion. Peter Schiff was on, I believe, Fox? I think it was Fox. And there was a Bitcoin person on there essentially just ripping him. And not that I was agreeing with the person about Bitcoin, but they were telling Schiff like, yes, but like still, they're both making good arguments to each other. Peter Schiff was like, yeah, but gold has more intrinsic value, which it does. And she said, yeah, but you can't really use it for currency. Yeah. And you can use Bitcoin for currency and transactions and this or that. And he said, well, yeah, but then behind Bitcoin, what holds it? Just somebody wants to buy it for more and hopes that you hold it and see they can sell it for more. So both of them have really good arguments. And I think the underlying for both is they're both not really that great of an investment. Maybe you can hold a small portion of your portfolio in gold. And we do for some of our clients. I'm not saying that not to hold any gold, but a small portion. Bitcoin doesn't have a lot of intrinsic value. It does have some like technology and some application value. But really behind Bitcoin, there's no asset that backs it. There isn't. There's nothing physically backing that asset. And so really it's like a derivative. And derivatives are very high risk and they're very volatile. And we can see that with Bitcoin. So to me, I think they're both making good arguments. I would say nobody knows why gold is going up. I can tell you the bottom line. Same reason that Bitcoin's going up when it goes up. People are buying it.
Let's shift over to some recent news around Tesla laying off 10% of their global workforce.
Yep.
Elon Musk kind of playing some damage control, saying every half decade or so, we have to do a complete organizational overhaul to reach the next level, which is essentially what they're going through right now. How true is that? What's your thoughts around this stock and the health of Tesla, short-term and long-term?
I think they'll be fine long-term.
Yeah.
I think in the short-term, they missed their deliveries and they're probably going to miss them again. And so they're trying to trim some fat off the payroll to help buffer that. I also don't think they need to make as many cars. So they're trying to maybe ease off, miss a couple, and then lower their expectations so that when they get in this next phase, they can get back into a track of beating those reports like they had been. It was almost a joke a long time ago to will Tesla miss its expectations? No, it's going to blow them out of the water. So it was analysts were dying on saying Tesla's going to go down. And now everybody for the past 10 years have been saying Tesla this, Tesla that. Well, now they're having their day.
Yeah.
We're underweight.
When you say underweight, what does that mean?
Meaning if we hold it, we're going to trim the position back to a minimum. And probably not hold a ton of that. We did that with Verizon not too long ago for some of our clients. We've done that with bank stocks last year.
And the reason being?
Sometimes there's better places and better names to hold. So like if I want to be in technology sector, I'm going to go look for, if I'm buying individual stock, I'm going to go look for some of the names in the tech sector that probably are going to do well. Vice versa. If I'm buying funds, probably ETFs, I'm going to buy sector focused ETFs that hold those stocks, like XLK or IYW. Those are good technology ETFs that I like. So
when you say underweight, it's kind of trimming back a little bit because you think there might be some volatility and some turbulence.
We don't have long-term confidence in that stock at the moment, or we don't see that it's an opportunity to hold that. Really what when underweight on a quality name long-term like Tesla means we're looking for a re-entry point.
There you go.
So we're likely going to be back in the name and heavier than we are right now. But I think that would take some retooling of like Tesla's going through, and they need to probably have a good quarter or two. So we're not going to look to maybe even get in at the bottom. We just want to get into where a nice long run again to where we can get that stock value back up.
When is it appropriate to be overweight in a stock?
When a stock is like super undervalued, like right now, I would say a stock that I think that has that potential to be an overweight call, excuse me, is like United Healthcare. They're trading in the 400s. I think that there's a high likelihood you could get by sometime this year a rating on the street by an analyst saying a price target in the mid 500s to high 500s. They're so integrated in the market. They had a pullback and people took profits and they're down quite a bit, but they pay a steady dividend and they're a good healthcare person's company. So that's an example of a time we might go overweight. Or in 2020, we went super overweight in like Twilio.
Yeah.
About that. So we had a long run in Twilio and we rode that thing all the way to the top and down a little bit too, but we eventually got out of it mostly. And so now that's an underweight holding for us as well. It's equal weight means we're probably, you know, in market index, if you tracked it, would likely have as much of exposure in a percentage that you might. So those are kind of what those names mean.
It's good terminology to understand, right? Because one, you want to understand this if and when you're talking to your financial advisor. Two, if you're making your own decisions, which isn't always suggested unless it's your day-to-day focus. But that being said, you got to understand the rules of the game and the terminology of the game you're playing, because it's only going to equip you to make more informed and better decisions. So I was like asking those questions, one, because I like to learn. This is not my world that Ryan plays in every single day. And two, I want to make sure that we're asking the right questions for you guys to keep up with a lot of the stuff that's coming out of your mouth.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
Now shifting over to real estate housing, the week of April 15th, inventory update is up 2.6% week over week, up almost 30% year over year. It's still down 38.2% compared to the same week in 2019. But just to kind of back up for you guys a little bit, because we've been tracking this for since the pandemic, back in June of 2023, inventory was down almost 54% compared to 2019 that same week. So now we're at 38.2%. So we're seeing a little bit more inventory hit the market.
Yep.
Total housing starts came out this week. Housing starts in March were well below the expectations. However, starts in January and February were revised up. Single family housing starts are up 22% year over year in March. Multifamily starts are down significantly. You know, building at scale right now is challenging. A lot of developers are struggling right now to make the numbers pencil, dealing with supply chain issues still, dealing with labor shortages, and still dealing with the fact that a lot of material costs are still really high, in addition to the fact that labor is still really high. There's a major misalignment unless you are a massive, massive organization and builder that can absorb a lot of that stuff and just kind of, you know, average out over the timeline of what you're doing, still staying ahead. A lot of these smaller, mid-sized builders, you know, syndicators, small-time developers, they cannot take those hits and therefore they can't afford to build. So we're seeing some, you know, some starts definitely slow down. Home builder confidence remained flat. It's still at the same level it was the previous month. To give you guys an idea on privately owned housing starts in March, those were seasonally adjusted at an annual rate of 1.32 million, which was almost 15% below the revised February estimate and is 4.3% below the March estimate. Mm. Building permits, privately owned housing units authorized by building permits in March were at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.48, which was 4.3% below the revised February number and 1.5% below the March number. U.S. house prices declined in January for the third consecutive month due to high borrowing costs. And this was the latest from S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index. So still something to pay attention to here. Houses are still trading. I still think it's a great time to buy. A little bit less competition, a little bit more housing inventory to choose from. And when rates do start to cut at some point in time, instead of just waiting for those to cut and seeing more people come into the market, going after the same and or less amount of homes, this might be a nice little window that you can find an investment property, find an owner-occupied property. So things to be paying attention to there. Now shifting over to the commercial real estate side, I saw this was pretty shocking and I'm starting to see a few more of these trickle out. I've been on some recent calls with big developers, big hedge funds that are trying to offload some problematic properties from their portfolio. The largest office building in St. Louis just sold for $3.5 million in 2006. It had sold for $205 million. So a $201.5 million delta right there. $205 million in 2006 to 2024, it sold for $3.5 million. U.S. credit card delinquency rates were highest on record in the fourth quarter per the Fed, the Reserve Bank of Philadelphia report. Percentage of companies who defaulted on debt more than once has reached the second highest since 2008 per S&P Global Ratings. So again, a lot of headwinds in the market. Still going to be interesting to see how this all flushes out in the commercial real estate sector. But when you think about rates continuing to stay higher longer, some of those lifeline, the rate cuts are some of the last lifelines that investors and developers are holding out for.
Yeah.
So the longer that can gets kicked down the road, the more pressure and distress that remains in certain sectors of the commercial real estate market that could create great opportunity. Now, if you're on the other side of it and you're starting to feel some of that pain, you know, that's going to be something that you got to navigate and get through. But if you're on the buy side and you're an investor, and there's just still a lot of dry powder sitting on the sidelines that is just kind of trying to sort through what's going to happen this year. So very interesting times, but to see something, I mean, this St. Louis office building, this high rise is gorgeous. $205 million, you know, almost 20 years ago, and it's selling for $3.5 million this year. That's
epic.
That's insane.
To me, that's pretty epic. Like, it could be like such a killer deal. I mean, what they're going to put it into apartments, aren't they?
I don't know what they said they were going to do with it. That being said, I know how much square footage is in that building.
And how much it would, they had to show like proof of funds.
And the $3.5 million that it traded for, I mean, that's, it's got to be sub $5 a square foot.
Oh, yeah. But they probably said, well, okay, because the city has to approve the sale of a building like that.
Correct.
So they probably went in and were like, hey, look, we got $140 million in our bank. So we have the funds to secure a loan, a construction loan, so that we can get this building.
They're going to redevelop it. It's going to be aligned with the city's goal.
They're going to refi that in the future and make a shitload of money. Can you imagine that? Because that building's worth more than $3.5 million.
I mean, I thought I was getting a good deal on my building out in Oklahoma.
That's the best deal probably of the year.
That deal right there is next level. And more of those are coming out and behind the scenes. I was on a couple calls over the past couple weeks, and there are other deals like that that are out there, and big money is working through it. So we talked about this Vietnamese property tycoon who
had
a $27 billion damages accounted for after she was found guilty of embezzling $12.5 billion and setting up fake loan applications to withdraw money from the Saigon Commercial Bank, which she owned at 90% stake. She
was like laundering money through her
She was
business.
Laundering money. And as of this past week, she has been sentenced to death in one of the biggest corruption cases in history.
In what country?
She was in Vietnam.
Wow, they do death penalty for financial crimes.
Drong Mai Lan. I mean, I guess, I don't think they normally do, but when it's the biggest in history, I guess they make an exception. When you're talking about money, people do crazy things.
Dude, I bet you they're going to do some wild.
So we will close out on that. Appreciate you guys tuning in this week. Don't forget to leave a review. We appreciate you guys. Don't forget to check out millionairemindcast.com for all the great stuff that we got in the store for you guys. Show notes, links, resources, all of that good stuff. With that being said, we'll see you guys in next week's episode. Keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers.
Cheers, y'all.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Money Moves. Be sure to tune in next week for more news and updates. And if you got some value from today's show, all we ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're going to get entered into win a $100 gift card. Also, don't forget to take advantage of Ryan's free financial X-ray on your investment portfolio. And to do so, all you have to do is text the word X-ray to 844-447-1555. What we have found by offering this out is most people have no idea what they're being charged from a fee perspective, or really in most cases, overcharged, and whether or not their current investment and financial plan is actually aligned with what they're trying to accomplish. And this is something that Ryan and his amazing team do for all of our listeners for free. So be sure to take them up on that. Again, that's X-ray, one word, 844-447-1555. Also, if you're an accredited investor and you're not on my deals list, be sure to text the word deals to 844-447-1555 to be notified of the private investment offerings my team and I put out. And last, don't forget to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family at millionairemindcast.com. Whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, calculators, the Rich Life Planner for those looking to take their goal setting and productivity to the next level, we've got all kinds of great and valuable tools available at millionairemindcast.com. With that being said, that's all for this week. Until next week's episode, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.